Hey, fannies, it's Andrew, half of Hey Kids Comics, the show that you are listening to on the Jedi Cold Network. And I'm not here to present a podcast to you. I'm here to actually talk to you a little bit about an upcoming event. And to join me, Kelly Long, guest of the show, and kind of big kahuna for this thing. So, Kelly, what are we talking about?
Hey Andy, thanks so much. So, what is coming up in the Boonshoff Museum of Discovery in Dayton, Ohio on June 21st and 22nd? We're going to have a geek prom and a geek fest. So, the geek prom section is on Friday night. We're going to have dancing, we're going to have live music. It's 21 and up, and it's $20 to get in. You get a drink, and you get some snacks, and you get to support the museum. That is the fundraiser section of Geek Fest. Geek Fest is the all-inclusive day. It's going to be from 10 to 4. We're going to have kids costume contests, the planets of Star Wars and the planetarium, the planets of Star Trek. We're going to have a new space exhibit that is debuting that weekend of Geek Fest that I can't really talk about because it's super secret, and Klingons and way more.
Super excited about those Klingons, by the way, ladies and
I
gentlemen. Super excited.
Super.
And where do people buy tickets for this bad boy?
To catch tickets for the event, you have to go to www.boonshoftmuseum.org. You can purchase tickets for the event. You can purchase raffle tickets. And if you want to feel like you may, if you feel like you need to make a donation to the museum, you can also do that there too. We are a nonprofit, so this raises money to help feed the animals in our accredited zoo, to keep all of our natural history collections intact, and to be a service to the community.
Also, you get all of that and you get to feel good about yourself. That's amazing. And I'm going to be there hosting costume contests and doing trivia and just generally being a jackanape about town. What's not to
You can't
love?
miss it.
You can't miss it. Come down to Crazy Andy's. Get some pizza. See a Klingon. Don't touch a sloth. At the Boonshoff Museum. June 21st and 22nd. Buy the tickets on the website that I can't remember the.
www.boonshoffmuseum.org.
That's the one, ladies and gentlemen. So now we're going to throw you back to your regularly scheduled programming, but don't forget June 21st and 22nd, June 21st and 22nd, June 21st and 22nd for Geek Fest. Going to Geek Fest because it's the best they got Klingons, so bring on the fun. I added another line to the song.
Ooh.
Coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Welcome back, fannies. This is Hey Kids Comics, issue 310, I think, if my numbering and my counting are correct.
311.
Oh, that's right, it's 311 because that's the cop code for public indecency, for
That's right, yeah.
having my wiener out in public. See, I'm gonna work the word wiener in now too,
Yeah,
because it's a
wiener.
good word. It's a funny word. Everybody should use that word.
Oscar Meyer did.
What? Oscar
Oscar
Meyer?
Meyer. Oscar Meyer used that word a lot.
Yeah, he got away with it. You know that he just wanted to say wiener. I know that the synonymous with each other, but the connotation had to be there when you're Oscar Meyer and you're starting a company and you're like, I could call this a lot of things. I'm gonna go with wiener. I am Andrew, as always with me, the Jedi Cole Houston, co-host of Hey Kids Comics.
Hey, and I am back, and
We're
it
tired.
didn't really go away, but I went away. Yeah, we're
We went away. We went away and we returned. We went into the multiverse and then we came back, and this is where we are. Yes, so tonight, Cole had an idea for a show, and I fully support it. Cole, what are we calling this thing?
This is, of course, issue 311, Foo Fighters. And we're not going to go. We haven't suddenly gone into like a music podcast about music Cole doesn't know.
Or we're not talking about UFOs for once.
That's true.
Yeah.
That was UFO fighters.
Well, they called the I think it was the, I don't know. It was a World War II term that was used for unidentified flying objects in World War II when they would see. I know this, but I don't know it. So let's just move on because I'm gonna screw this way up. But yes, tonight we are talking about none other than the man of mystery, the traveling purveyor of all good in the world, and fighter of evil fathers, Shang-Chi, the master of kung fu. Relevant topic tonight because the announcement has come out. I saw a teaser, and Cole and I were sharing the teaser back and forth, what, 2 or 3 months ago? But it's come out pretty much set in stone that a director and a writer have been signed to the Shang-Chi movie. Apparently, after the success of Black Panther, they fast-tracked a Shang-Chi movie. And I can tell you, Hey Kids Comics, as a whole, cannot be happier for this to happen.
That's right, especially this half, because that was one of my favorite.
He's become one of my favorites, too, and we'll get into it on the show, but I don't know if they're... Okay, so when you do the research, and if you read comics, if you've read Marvel for a while, Shang-Chi kind of exists in every pocket of the Marvel Universe, whether it be the Avengers, which he's been a part of, Spider-Man, the X-Men, any possible imaginable iteration of the Marvel Universe has had a Shang-Chi connection, and that's pretty amazing because he really isn't, the Silver Surfer, he isn't even, you know, Captain America, he isn't Spider-Man, who I think is probably the next closest to that, you know, he's with the possible, you know, exception of the fact that we're using comic book physics here, he's sort of the Bobby Blakey of the Marvel Universe in the sense that you can achieve, you're led to believe, and unlike Batman, because when you're Batman, you need billions of dollars. When you're Shang-Chi, you just need to have the willpower to become one with your universe and train in martial arts, and apparently have an evil father that's invented by Max Romer in 1912 to become a hard-traveling hero that gets to hang out with the likes of Captain America, Spider-Man, and Wolverine.
Well, you know, in his own title, of all the characters, Marvel had this curious way of, like, insinuating different characters into titles.
Right.
And Shang-Chi actually went up against none other than Dr. Doom.
Everybody's fought Dr. Doom.
I know. It's like Fight Club. You know, if you're in Marvel Club, you will fight Dr. Doom.
Right. The first rule of Marvel's Fight Club is you don't talk about Marvel's Fight Club. The second rule of Fight Club is everybody fights Dr. Doom.
That's right.
Like Luke Cage going to Latveria demanding Dr. Doom give him his money was a thing that happened in the Marvel Universe. But yes, Shang-Chi has fought Dr. Doom. He's fought on many occasions Hydra, on many occasions the Hand. And again, you're talking about a guy that until recently, and I'm pretty sure they wrote it out, I'm pretty sure it was in and then out, and it was only in because of a highfalutin multiverse smashing pre-Secret War, new Secret War, not old Secret War, contrivance where he spoke to the source code of the universe because he's at one with the Force and the Force is at one with him. And he, what show is this? and he got some weird abilities that I'm pretty sure at this point have been written out of continuity. But he's, for the most part, just a hand-to-hand fighter guy.
Yes.
The pre-Richard Dragon of the Marvel Universe.
he was sort of the preeminent kung fu guy. You know, he starts out in the what was the time? I'm ill prepared here.
That's okay. We've had a long run of really being really prepared.
Yeah, that's true. We deserve to just.
This is just our shitting around show, so deal with it, people.
Freewheel it. Because the Master Kung Fu is one of those titles. Every now and again, you'll run into these, especially at Marvel, where a title doesn't have a number one.
Right. It was special Marvel Edition number 15 in 1973. Sort of like the way that Moon Knight was introduced in Marvel Spotlight. You get these characters that weren't introduced in their own, you know, they weren't. Marvel did a thing, and did DC ever do it? Where they had the kind of compendious spotlight style books where they would just kind of feature things and then they would toss you a new character just to see if it stuck. And if it stuck, well, I guess Showcase back in the early DC days was like that, where they would just throw something at the wall, see if it stuck, which is what they did with Marvel, did it all through the 60s and 70s, just to see if a character, you know, had the staying power to get its own book. So in 73, none other than, Steve Englehart, but Jim Starlin created Shang-Chi, which explains why we like him so much. Because, you know, Starlin, known for his cosmic craziness in terms of, like, creating Thanos, creating Pip the Troll, Warlock, you know.
Oh, yeah, he was sort of the all over, kind of, you know, just everywhere in the entire galaxy, and created a lot of the pantheon of the intergalactic Marvel Universe.
Sure, absolutely.
Then suddenly you have this sort of pinpoint down to earth.
Right. Character in Shang-Chi, which, like I said, really the salt of the earth. So let's talk about what was going on in 73, which is 4 years before I was born. But, you know, what caused the creation of a Shang-Chi? What was the impetus for the creation of this character? I don't know how familiar our listeners are with 1973, but I can tell you what 1977 through 1987 looked like. All holes filled with ninja. That's what it looked like. It was Bruce Lee. It was Game of Death. It was the rise of the martial arts star. Listen, if you can make Remo Williams a martial arts star, if you can have movies like Gymkhana be successful, in big air quotes, successful.
Yeah, well, that's, of course, later, after the martial arts craze had got to the point where you had to do things like Gymkhana to get kids in the theater.
I love the speculation that somebody was sitting in a boardroom, a bunch of old white dudes are like, okay, what's going to get kids in the theater? What's big right now? Kung Fu.
Yeah.
Yes. What else? Men's gymnastics.
That's right. We got the Olympics coming up. The Summer Games are coming. Kids are going to be nuts. for men's gymnastics. What's that? The Nadi Kacha Cha Cha.
Yes. Her name was Nadi Kacha Cha Cha. That was her name.
Sports talk.
That was her name. Nadi Kacha Cha Cha. Somebody please remember that Nadi Kacha Cha Cha was an invention of this show.
Yeah, that's right. Hashtag Nadi. Can't even say it anymore.
But 1973 saw the. Because what this really does is meld two worlds. When it comes to pop culture, one of the worlds was, and in 73, I just pulled up the movies of 73, and we're going to leave a lot out because they don't make sense in the context of this, because I don't think Serpico speaks to, tonally maybe it does. I could probably make that case, but Soylent Green certainly, God, 73, good year. 73 was a good year. Exorcist, American Graffiti, The Sting, the original Westworld, Papillon, Live and Let Die came out in 73.
Oh, like, wow. Yeah.
Serpico. High Plains Drifter? Shit, that was a golden year for movies. All right. Sorry, this podcast is now called The Movies of 1973.
Well, you have to look at the precursor to this, and that is the 60s when Bruce Lee... I mean, I think there had been martial arts stuff had made its way to the U.S., to be sure. Yeah. But Bruce Lee popularized it and brought... also took away the mystique of the martial arts by introducing it to the West in a way it had not been in the past.
Oh, you cannot underestimate the popularity of Bruce Lee.
Oh yeah, I mean literally everybody was kung fu fighting.
Yeah, but there's another piece to this equation, right? And that is the Wicker Man. No, that was the original was 1973, by the way. God damn, 73. That was the early 70s in the late...
Nick Cage was just a pup.
I don't even know if he was... I guess he's always been alive. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's...
Well, he's been alive forever. He wrote the very first song. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That's Barry Manilow.
Well,
I don't know how I got the two of those confused.
From now on, in the continuity of the Hey Kids comics world, Nick Cage is a Highlander, and he's been alive forever. No, don't forget also the exploitation films of the 70s, which speak directly to this. You know, movies like the popularity of movies like Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song and Superfly and, you know, Shaft, which was partially a kung fu. These movies personify this idea of rising up and fighting the man.
Yeah.
And nothing was more popular than that, the man, quote unquote. And nothing is more representative of the man than your father, the super criminal, realizing that you're being groomed as his replacement and throwing off the shackles and going on a vengeful tear to bring the man down.
Yeah.
That is a exploitation kung fu movie. That's what that is.
Yeah, that is every, you know, the evil master who comes in and tries to tell everybody what for, and then the one guy stands up to him, and then pretty soon everybody's joining the fun.
Right. So let's get into the man himself. I think we've set enough of a backdrop for which the year was 1973. Milk cost a nickel and was brought to your door and a cow said it's older than old Hollywood. That's old radio. All right, so talk to me about Shang-Chi, Cole. Like what was Shang-Chi's deal? What was his jam?
Wow. Essentially he starts out as a kind of Bruce Lee clone. I think that, you know, Marvel wanted something that they could jump on that bandwagon with.
Sure.
And then they create this character running around in a brightly colored gi and kicking some serious ass. And then somewhere down the line, somebody said, hey, why don't we tie this character into the Fu Manchu mythos from Sax Rohmer? They actually licensed. In the comics, there is indicia that they have licensed the rights to use Sir Dennis Nayland Smith and the other characters from the Fu Manchu's tales. So it was almost like, you know, getting a Doc Savage into the Marvel comics somehow.
You know, it's really weird because this character, Fu Manchu, was developed and created in like 1912. So you've got this in Cole and I's heyday, which is the day of gentlemen scientists.
That's so true.
You know, like this character that's created this absolute 120% pulp character who, yes, we know is problematic.
Yeah.
and Sax Rohmer was called on the carpet for his problematic nature even back then, which is saying something. If in like 1922 somebody's like, we got a little bit of a problem with the way that your characters are representing, you know, the Chinese populace, then you got a real problem. But you know, Max, God, do we want to talk about Max Romer at this point a little bit?
It's Sax Romer, is it not?
It's Sax. Why do I keep saying Max? Because I think he's a James Bond villain. Is that why?
Could be. Maybe you're mistaken with Max von Sydow.
I think I might. Everybody should be mistaken with Max von Sydow. Sax Romer, whose name
is... Who ironically played Ming the Merciless, who is a very Fu Manchu-like character. So I think we've gone full circle.
We have. This show is over. Thank you. We've done our job. I want to know what came first. So, 1883, okay?
All right.
The saxophone. This is the show you're getting tonight, folks.
Wow.
This is it. This is the show you're getting. The saxophone. I'm looking for when the saxophone was created or developed, the history of the saxophone. I don't care about the pitch and range. I don't want to know the 1840. The saxophone. Sax Romer came before. Another piece of continuity for this show. The saxophone was named after Sax Romer. That's what I'm saying. That's the direction I'm taking this.
This is for our retcon episode later on.
That's right. So, God, Sax. Arthur Henry Sarsfield Ward, better known as Sax Romer, by the way, wrote... He was absolutely a pulp novelist. Started writing the Fu Manchu character in 1931. Actually, no, he started in like 1913 to 1917. But in 31, he wrote his third book. That's when it became popular. I'm curious, and I don't know this. How did Marvel end up buying the rights to, it seems like a really weird buy. You know, it seems like the weirdest auction to buy this.
All I can think of is it had to have been cheap.
Right. Right. But some interesting indicia about Mr. Sax is that he claims that he was a member of the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, or the OGD, and the Rosicrucians, which, at some point, whether it's in our continuity of numbering or not, within the next year, there will be a show on magic and comic books. I'm going to do it. One way or another, Cole and I'm going to press gang Cole into doing this, and we are going to have a show on magic and comics, because this guy claims that he was not only the creator of Fu Manchu, but also a honest-to-God magician. Which is why I absolutely love the time of the gentleman explorer and the gentleman scientist. Yes.
And the thing is,
you'd be like, I'm a magician. Like, what? Go ahead, Cole.
No, I think that you have to put Fu Manchu in his time. And honestly, it is a time when, you know, the unfortunately stereotypical problematic Asian, the Chinese look, actually existed. We had a friend whose family had escaped China during the Communist Revolution, due in no small part because the way that we found out about this was he was talking about the long bearded wizard on a Dungeons and Dragons book, and his mom hated that because it reminded her of her grandfather, who had that traditional Chinese look, and reported them to the authorities, so they had to escape.
Was the reason that he was reported because he had the long beard?
No, he was doing the reporting. He was on board with the commies. But because he was an informer, she carried that hatred over to the hapless wizard on the cover of a... But the point somewhere in all of that was, in some cases, there is a basis for what becomes the stereotypical look of characters. So there genuinely were people, even into the last century, who sported the very Fu Manchu look.
That's an amazing story that you just told that I need to know more about. I would very much like to talk to this person if we can get this person just to talk to him. Okay, I'm with that. Now, I think. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I think it's because that look was so well known in the West. That was the. It was almost like the types of people from other countries you would go and see on display at the World's Fair in a different time.
Right. Yeah. No, I get that. So let's move into the role of Fu Manchu in the comics. And you know what's funny is I think we've talked about this in prior issues, but I think this is the first time we're really going to get to really talk about it. So Fu Manchu. Who was Fu Manchu? Well, Fu Manchu not only was a creation of I'm going to start calling him
Saxy.
I'm going to start calling him Rax Roamer. Like the now defunct. Is it defunct? Roast beef sandwich joint. They really did up Fu Manchu though. I don't know if you're familiar with all of the Fu Manchu stuff that that they did with Fu Manchu, but they just really made him like the worst version of Ra's al Ghul.
But in all fairness, I think one thing you have to give to Sax Roamer that you have to give to Marvel for carrying this through is the honorific. Most people refer to him simply as Fu Manchu, and he's got the traditional costume. He's got, you know, he just exudes ancient China.
Right.
But there's one important aspect that I think gets lost in all of the, you know, the knee-jerk reaction, and that is Doctor. He is Dr. Fu Manchu.
Really?
And he didn't just like, oh, I'll just start calling myself Doctor, like, you know, Count Olaf or something.
No, the litany of like, so usually like, because we do our research, right? So I was researching Fu Manchu and just looking all over the internet and reading back through some old comics just for high points. But one of the places I go is Wikipedia. Usually you'll go to a Wikipedia page, like if you went to a Wikipedia page for, let's say, Ra's al Ghul or Doctor Doom or the Grey Gargoyle or, you know, Deadshot. They give you a character biography, right? Deadshot was born in Floyd Lawton, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you read it out. The Wikipedia page for Fu Manchu reads like Chuck Norris jokes. It's so great. I'm just going to fire off a few, just because I think they're magical. Fu Manchu was revealed to have knowledge of Jack the Ripper's methodology. Yeah. Fu Manchu eventually approached a scientifically perfect American white woman to be the mother of his son. What? What? Okay, so this one makes no sense, but I'm going to read it anyway because it's pretty awesome. Tony McKay and Neilan Smith launched an attack on Saipan. Saipan is was it an island? I think it was an island. A la,
Yeah, because his army were known as the Saipan.
Right. Like everything that's now based on the movie that was, you know, the Bruce Lee movie that now, like, Mortal Kombat and...
Oh, yeah, and, like, Fistful of Yen and the Kentucky Fried Movie.
Yeah, they're all based on this fight on an island with...
The island of Dr. Klon, or the mountain of Dr. Klon in that case.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen the Kentucky Fried Movie, it is brilliant old school comedy by the, I think it is early Zucker Brothers, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it is too.
Or Fire Sign Theater, one of the two.
But it reads that Fu Manchu kills McKay and then has a Japanese sumo wrestler bodyguard named Tak basically cripple Smith. And then the next line is, Fu Manchu later introduces schizophrenia to a gorilla, which was used as the final guardian of his New York headquarters. What? I love this. This is the way I want... Cole, promise me this, because you're going to outlive me. When you eulogize me, I need this to be the way that my eulogy is. Just make some shit up. about inducing schizophrenia in a gorilla and read it at my funeral because that is fan-damn-tastic.
You know, I loved reading Master Kung Fu when I stumbled on it sometime in the 80s. And would try to, you know, track down issues where I could, to the point where I'm probably about 30 issues away from having all of them. And some of them are just out of reach, to say the least. But, you know, it's pretty awesome to,
you need to give me that list, by the way, of the 30 you need so that I can.
Yeah, I need to have that list for myself because I keep doing what I do with all such things and buy the shit again.
Because I was on Free Comic Book Day looking at some Shang-Chi Master of Kung Fu books, and I'm like, I wonder if Cole needs any of these. But irregardless, the most important thing that Fu Manchu ever did was sire Shang-Chi, the Master
in fact,
of Kung Fu.
Shang-Chi had an older sister.
Yes.
A much older sister, Fa Lo Sui, I believe it was.
Okay.
And there was a great story, I think it was in the 100th issue, where they actually show like young Shang-Chi running around like a not bald young Kang.
Right.
Kung Fu.
Right.
And stumbling upon his sister begging for the elixir vitae. And I think, you know, God, how can we talk about Fu Manchu and not talk about the damned elixir vitae?
All right, break it down.
Okay, if you're unfamiliar, the elixir vitae was, like you said, he's like bad yesteryear stereotype version of, Ra's al Ghul, in that he basically had his own kind of take on the Lazarus Pit long before Batman was invented.
Right. Wait a second. Are we drawing a conclusion here? Are we coming to a conclusion that Ra's al Ghul might have been based on Fu Manchu?
I think that, you know, that's I think we've just Martha'd ourselves.
I think maybe we did. We're coming up with all kinds of stuff tonight. That's why I like a freewheeling show, man. We come up with all kinds of stuff. So yes, the Elixir Vitae, or the Fountain of Youth, essentially.
Yeah, you know, the idea has been around forever. But I think what, like Ra's al Ghul, the Elixir Vitae keeps Fu Manchu around forever. He's ancient. I mean, literally, he knew the ancient one in finishing school. they were contemporaries. But they, you know, that's part of his power. And ultimately, you know, Fu Manchu finds his ultimate foil in Sir Dennis Nayland Smith. And I think part of what you see in those tales, I don't have enough familiarity with the actual Fu Manchu mythos.
Okay.
But there was a Peter Sellers film in the 70s, I'm going to date myself, The Fiendish Plot of Dr. Fu Manchu, in which Sellers played both Nayland Smith and Fu Manchu.
Okay.
And part of the idea was, possibly taken directly from the stories, is Fu Manchu essentially keeping his nemesis alive and well.
Oh. So keeping the quarry alive,
yeah,
to continue the... Okay.
He would be, it's sort of like, you know, at the end of The Dark Knight. It's like, you know, we're going to do this dance forever.
Right. Okay.
And the two are inexorably linked. So what you get once Fu Manchu is part of the equation and Shang-Chi is now his son, which is like something about his name meaning something like a golden shining path.
Mm-hmm. I believe you are accurate in that assessment, yes.
So basically, that adds this wonderful plot element because Shang-Chi suddenly gets kind of adopted by this organization called MI6, if I remember correctly.
It is. Well, he becomes, you know, he starts off by getting away And then he gets adopted by MI6, which is the British version of the, you know, the FBI or the CIA or the, you know, SHIELD.
Yeah, but they were sort of like a freelance version of MI5.
Yeah, yeah, they're the they're kind of the SHIELD of that. Yes, I'm with you. Because Pete Wisdom is a member of the MI6.
Absolutely. And but you get these great characters, and I've never bothered to research, and perhaps you may have stumbled on this, if some of the other characters actually came from Romer's writings.
I'll look into it. I'll look into it just to see what I can see.
Yeah, because, gosh, I'm
Hey, it's a freewheeling show, baby.
Yeah, I've been curious for many years because you had Clive Reston and Liko Wu, who's been girlfriend to both of them. There's and Blackjack Tarr, who was one of my favorite characters. He's just like this big brawler. And I think he may have been invented by, or, you know, created by Marvel, because there is an issue where he's introduced and is a vastly different kind of character.
Sure, sure. Well, and keep in mind, you know, the group that created him, you know, we are talking about Starlin. Starlin has a soft spot in his heart for big bruisery guys.
He kind of starts out as just like this big brawler, and then they later kind of soften him up and make him a very important part of the crew. And he's kind of like Roger Moore in Live and Let Die, only, you know, 6 feet taller with a big handlebar mustache.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I like it. It's exactly like Roger Moore in Live and Let Die, except 100% not like that. Like, I'm kidding. Because Roger Moore is the most physically different.
Yeah.
Possible character. Like, that's just funny to me. Yeah, but Shang-Chi falls in with MI6, right? He becomes, and I don't think we did enough justice to speaking to the fact that this came out when at the same time as the show Kung Fu came out.
Okay, yeah, so the timing was very much, you still had the Bruce Lee love going on.
Right, but you have this idea of this character who could, after the initial kind of serialized break from his past, then what do you do with him? You know, then how do you handle it? You make him sort of that character where he goes kind of on walkabout, forms his own essentially kind of Heroes for Hire deal, Freelance Restorations Limited, with Tarr, Reston, Liko Wu, and Neelan, and forms this kind of Heroes for Hire situation.
Yeah, it pretty much was. In fact, I think now that I think about it, they called it MI6 in the comics to, I guess, not run afoul of MI5 by being, you know, like if they came up with something that might inadvertently have been revealing a secret, they wouldn't get in trouble. But
Right. But as, you know, as a part of this, he kept crossing paths with his father's criminal organization until finally his father, quote-unquote, dies.
Yeah. You actually do, and I think it was almost like one of those, you know, Death of Sherlock Holmes sort of things.
Right.
They, like, no, you can't do that. Of course you can't. It's like killing the Joker at the end of Batman. No, no, no.
Well, he, quote-unquote, dies, right? Big air quotes, dies. At which point Shang-Chi hangs it up. Heads back to China and becomes a fisherman to live out his days as Tommy Lee Jones in U.S. Marshals, or what movie was it where he was up in the wilderness? And
oh God! Well, the thing about it is that's where I broke company. My friend Steve, who's been on the show many times, will probably chuckle if he happens to hear this one. I always said Jim Lee killed Gene Day, who was the amazing artist who was on the project. Mike Zeck and Gene Day were the ones who really defined the look of the series, of Shang-Chi, of pretty much everything about that whole book. Right. And Gene Day, his work was impeccable. There was no one like him in comics. So he actually dies toward what becomes the end of the series.
Okay.
And what happened was, it was kind of a blessing in disguise, because Jim Shooter had decreed that...
lots of things. That's what he had decreed.
He basically said that, and, you know, and probably in a coke-induced stupor, we spoke to how Shang-Chi is a character who's created at a time when martial arts madness was all over the place. In the Hey Kids Comics Live, everybody was kung fu fighting. I think we talked about the Howard the Duck issue, Master of Quack Fu.
Yes, we did.
Which sort of parodied that, but it was a social commentary about, you know, the cultural appropriation before that was a word.
Right.
Because literally at that period, everybody was kung fu fighting, even though they didn't know what the hell they were doing.
Everybody had to have a kung fu fight. You couldn't have a Captain America brawl with Red Skull anymore. You had to have a kung fu fight with Red Skull now. You're literally correct. There was nobody that couldn't. Every fight had to be like wire work, kung fu, etc. So continue. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. It was just you hit the nail on the head.
Exactly. And that was one of the neat things that they did with that issue was, you know, talk about there's something deeper than just kicking ass to the martial arts.
Yes.
And it's very good if you ever get a chance to track that down. But so you move forward into the late 80s. What is the number one martial art icon in America?
In the late 80s. Jackie Chan? No. In the late 80s. A ninja?
Exactly.
Okay.
The ninja.
I thought you meant like a guy, and I was going to be Steven Seagal? Continue. Sorry.
So, okay. The ninja come and take over. They hove in. You know, a lot of people probably look and say, well, it's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's where that came from. And I have contended on the issue where we talked about that very thing. That kind of hits about the right, but in my personal experience, the first ninja that the broader part of America were exposed to was in the adaptation, the made-for-TV movie of James Clavell's Shogun.
Right, yes.
Where, like in the tail end of it, there, poof, there's ninja. So that, I think,
literally,
really
poof, there's ninja.
That inspired, I really honestly believe, that a combination of things, this perfect storm, created the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But it also meant that everyone was ninja crazy, as we talked about on the episode where we talked about the Tick television show, that in the comics, you know, Catherine was saying she wanted in the third season to have ninja, because that was a big part of the plot. And they were parroting that, the ninja craze, the hand and Daredevil and such like that. So it was handed down by Shooter that they either cancel the title, Master of Kung Fu, or Shang-Chi becomes a ninja. Well, there's a big problem there, Mr. Cultural Appropriation, because ninja are Japanese. And Shang-Chi is Chinese.
Yes. Yes, probably the most Chinese character. And the other problem with that is, for a long time, Shang-Chi was representative of one of the very, 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 very few Chinese characters in comic books. There were not very many at all. Matter of fact, I'm trying to think outside of I can't even think of another one. at that time period that was Chinese, unless you started getting into some of the Iron Fist stuff, and that wasn't even technically Chinese. They divorced that from China.
Yeah. But, you know, toward the end of this series, and the thing is, it was also when Shooter decrees this, the series was getting amazingly good, and the Fu Manchu stories were building to a fever pitch. And then they work in this tale where this concept where Fu Manchu needs the blood of Shang-Chi because the Elixir Vitae is no longer being as vitalicious as it used to be.
Vitalicious. So, somebody explain. Can you explain to me what Shang-Chi brings to the table that they're going to need?
Basically, it's the genetic material. He needs Shang-Chi's blood. I guess his sister's blood's no longer cutting it, and he hasn't used Shang-Chi's before.
So good. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I guess it kind of degrades over time. We just need to, like, you know, punch up the mix a little bit. So there's this whole plot, a fiendish plot of Dr. Fu Manchu, to get Shang-Chi to lure him to Hunan to surrender himself. And then you get all this cool stuff, like these weird mutant creatures that are part of his genetic experiments. And I think it was even earlier than that. There's like this whole kick-ass plot at one point where it was during Devil Deeds Done in Darkness that every single one of Shang-Chi's of Fu Manchu's armies are brought together. The Sai Fan were always ever present.
Yeah.
But then you get this great reveal that it is like Casanova Frankenstein bringing all of his gangs together and Mystery Men.
Damn it.
I didn't realize the Not So Goody Boys were actually from the pages of Master Kung Fu originally. But no, you know, he brings the Knights Templar and the Thuggee, which I thought, that is the stupidest name ever. And then fast forward a few years when Temple of Doom comes out and the Thuggee cult were central.
Yeah, and accurate. It's like, oh, I was wrong. Okay. No, I love the fact that all of the... Because you have... This idea of Hong Kong action films that are being made, you know, constantly throughout this time period, and exported in some fashion to the United States. I remember seeing my first real kind of Shaw Brothers Hong Kong action films on Laserdisc, in like, you know, some of it was on like. I think, no, that's not true. It wasn't on Laserdisc. It was on VHS. It was a bootleg copy of something that somebody picked up at some convention, probably sitting next to the Star Wars Christmas special at somebody's bootleg table. That was like a Shaw Brothers, one of the Kung Fumis, right? And we always talk about how comic books are maybe the perfect storytelling medium because you don't need... You're not required, you're not bound by the laws of physics or good acting to tell a story in comics. You just need a writer. It doesn't have to be good in order to tell your story. But I love the fact that Shang-Chi takes those ideas with a good writer, especially in the early days, and extrapolates them to to their furthest point. That's great. Like, that's the dream of being a comic book fan. Is reading the best genre piece that you can read, like Swamp Thing, right? The best genre piece that you can read, and that's going to outstrip any movie that you can watch. And that's what Shang-Chi does with this idea of kind of Hong Kong action. And I love it. And I love it. By the way, did you also know that Shang-Chi fought a dragon once?
I kind of half knew that.
Did you know that it was a British dragon?
I did not realize that.
So in one of the stories, I said that he met up with, earlier I said he met up with Pete Wisdom. So later in the Heroes for Hire days, keep in mind also, after Shang-Chi went off to his fishing village, you know, his old team, his old crew came back and got him because you were because of what you were just saying. You know, there was this terrorist group called Argus. Argus was wanting to attack the United States. So Shang-Chi was brought back in with his old team that brought him, you know, just when I thought it was out, you pulled me back in.
Yes, exactly.
You know, Toretto from Fast and the Furious style brought him back into the fold. But later he joins Heroes for Hire with all of your standard Heroes for Hire dudes, you know. Actually, I don't think so. I don't think he was in with at that point with Cage and Iron Fist. I think
now that would
was...
come later when they kind of, you know, they tried to do what thankfully never happened in the 80s.
Okay.
And you know, instead of making him into a the timely ninja of that period, years later they bring him back out of retirement and turn him into the martial arts hero with the. The armband dragon tattoo, and it just, that wasn't Shang-Chi.
Right, right. But he joins up later with, like I said, Pete Wisdom at one point, right, when he's still working for MI6. Pete Wisdom's MI13, by the way, which is like...
with, how many MIs do they have?
Which is like two times MI6 plus one. So that's something. But, There's this dragon in the Marvel Universe called the Welsh Dragon. And that's the one thing I always loved about British heroes is, you know, your American heroes, you don't have a lot of mythology built in. You don't have Camelot 3000 or, you know, the Arthurian legends per se built into it. But when you start getting into, like, Captain Britain and, you know, Lionheart and all those guys, you really get deep into that area. But there was this Welsh dragon that got stuck in humanoid form and apparently became a crime lord, and Shang-Chi had to fight a dragon, and he won. And
of course he won.
That's fantastic. This is a man with no superpowers, just complete control over his body, you know, fought a dragon. That's great.
And the thing about it is, I highly recommend if you get a chance to seek these books out. We talk all the time about, you know, reading and enjoying comics. And I think if you can get a good enough body of work together, and sometimes, you can get a good body of them cheap, check out some of these tales, because there's some really neat character development. There's a lot of secondary characters, and... You didn't get a lot of that back at that period in comics.
Right.
You know, where you had such richly developed characters and the interactions. I remember there was one where Shang-Chi is visiting Clive Reston's apartment, and he's got these, like, little miniature Bentleys and other British or European cars, you know, the schmancy to the manor born kind of convertibles and stuff on display in his apartment. And Shang-Chi is reflecting a lot of his dialogues in caption boxes, because he's always, you know, reflecting and meditating.
Right.
So basically, he's reflecting on the fact that apparently the West shares the East's fascination with miniaturization.
Yes.
And I thought, how cool. And there was, you know, wonderful interaction between, you know, Liko Wu and Clive Reston were a thing when Shang-Chi first joins up, and then later on she and Shang-Chi are falling in love, and there's a scene in one of the books where the leopard cult are trying to come kill them in this, like, I kid you not, they were at Rick's Casablanca, God's truth.
That's fantastic.
You know, they're kind of rekindling in this moment, and there's a scene, you know, where she's like, he's like, well, Shang need never know, and so they become lovers again, and at one point they're kind of in the afterglow, and the leopard guys try to come in through the window, and all of a sudden there's like a scene of this blast, and their bodies are flying out of the window, and then you've got, I kid you not, I can't remember the character's name, I wish I could find this thing that had his name, but they had this, like, Bogart looking guy with a shotgun and a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, like, evening, folks.
But that's what I love about this, man, is that the exploration of this character isn't... You can almost get away with anything with a character like Shang-Chi. And that's why, you know, you're not... The rules... When you're Shang-Chi, the rules don't apply. You can fight a dragon. You can meet Humphrey Bogart's analog in Rick's Casablanca. You can... Your dad can induce schizophrenia in a gorilla. It's all bets are off, and somehow it's still the most relatable, grounded character in the Marvel Universe. I don't know how they do that, but I think it's amazing. And I really hope that as we transition now into what we hope, you know, because we're running short on time, into what we hope the movie is going to be.
Oh, yes, we didn't even touch on that part.
Yeah, I hope that they do that. I hope that they really kind of go buck wild on this. So what do you want to see in the movie?
Personally, I would love to see... I kind of like the new modern. I don't know if he's still sporting the stupid tattoo. It just does not... It seems like it's bone claws is what it is. it's pandering to something that didn't need to be there. And I say that because if you look at the character, which is why I say bone claws, is because if you look at the character, there's no precedent. There's no reason. He's not some hip Asian kid who grew up on the gritty streets of Chicago.
Right.
You know, this is the son of Fu Manchu, for God's sake. It's not like this menu that I saw in a Chinese restaurant that had something that was like supposed to be ABC something, and it was, and they had in parentheses American-born Chinese.
Oh, like, man.
No, he was like classic. He was raised in the fortress of Fu Manchu.
Yeah, he's Chinese.
But I kind of like that, you know. Yeah, he's not Yakuza. Again, Japanese! But I like the kind of tracksuit look that he sports nowadays.
Right, right. I like it too. I really hope that we get in the movie that we get the early, you know, maybe Act One in the gi, and then we move to the tracksuit.
Yeah, I would like to see that, or at least, you know, if you show his youth growing up under Fu Manchu, that you get that. A take on that gi, because that was just such a neat element. And you know, he becomes kind of like olive oil, and everybody else changes clothes, and he's got like a whole closet full of the same gi.
Well, I mean, and that's a throwback to, like we were saying with Kane and Kung Fu, you know, it's the comic book version of that. You can't have your comic book character star walking around in a white gi, right?
Yeah.
So instead you have him walking around in a red gi with golden trim.
You know why? So the bad guys can't see me bleed.
But the thing is, that's the most low-key costume in the entire Masters of Kung Fu, you know, litany of characters. Because you got Fu Manchu, who's, like, literally dressed like... If you haven't seen Fu Manchu and you don't want to Google it, imagine Lo Pan from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, pretty much. Lo Pan is very much the Fu Manchu or...
Right, so that archetype.
The last of the Fu Manchus.
And I just hope, we get the big first arc. I don't know if we will, but I hope we get the big first arc of this story. And the fact that they were willing to lean in so heavily on Black Panther to make it accurate, I hope they'll do the same thing for Shang-Chi. I hope that they'll lean into the heritage of the character and not be scared of it, because I think we're ready for it, and I think it was going to be amazing if they do it. Sorry, soapbox over.
Oh no, that's quite all right. I like that. And I what I think would be fun is to kind of bury the lead with Fu Manchu.
Yeah, bury the lead.
Well, I think you know, if they have Fu Manchu kind of come in late into the game, like in the third act.
Okay. I'm listening.
That way you have a chance to develop Shang-Chi. I would love to have, if they're going to have Fu Manchu which we don't yet know if that's going to be the case, we need Clive Reston and Sir Dennis Nayland Smith and Liko Wu and Blackjack Tarr and, damn it, some other characters I can't recall. And I'd even like to see some playful nods to characters like the Rick, you know, the Casablanca character, or the, was it like Rufus T. Hackenbush?
Right.
Who, I kid you not, was a very Groucho Marxian character.
Right.
That occurred. But, you know, I want to see, you know, supporting cast like Lyman Leakes and some of the others. There was a great one where I think they were coming to the mansion of Nayland Smith, and there was some misunderstanding or misinterpretation. They weren't expecting anybody to be there, and Blackjack accosts Lyman Leakes, and it was the butler, and Liko is giving him a hard time, and he said, "What, you're working on the case of the manhandled manservant?" So there was just wonderful little layers of things, and it wasn't all just about fighting some of the most over the top kung fu villains. I wish I could find this stupid. There was one issue that showed like all of the allies and all of the enemies
on two different pages. Find it and post it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was so cool about that was, you know, you get like these characters like Bonebreaker, and I think he was the one who had like this crossbar knotted into his hair that had two like spiked balls on chains so he could swing his head around and attack. And there was a Razor Fist. There were actually three different Razor Fists over the years.
Yeah, there's got to be.
And Zaran the Weapons Master, who would go on to appear in the Avengers.
Right.
I think he fought the West Coast Avengers at one point with Bathrok Zilliper.
Well, I don't doubt it. I mean, stupid. Bathrok the Leaper, so stupid. I love it. I also found your image, I think.
Oh, bless you.
No, I didn't. Never mind. I'll keep looking. I'll find it.
I have my stack here, and I started looking at number 100 thinking it was somewhere in like a special edition issue. But now that my really racked my brain, it seems like it was in an oddball, like, you know, maybe they didn't have enough story that day.
Yeah.
That day. And, you know, it was just filler for some – it's somewhere in the 80s, I think.
Well, the internet's going buck wild for who's going to be cast.
Oh, yeah. So that reduces your chances of finding. Oh, and there was a great cover. Look up, if you can, folks, Master of Kung Fu number 82.
He's fighting like a tiger or some.
No, this one he's like jumping out of a helicopter and leopard men knives are being chucked at him.
It's two leopard men, man.
And Liko's piloting this yellow helicopter, and all I can think of is that they just painted over Thanos.
His Thanos copter?
Yeah,
I think from the Thanos copter.
Well, they got it in like the police auction or some.
Yeah, there's some great Leopard Men comic covers. If you have the opportunity to just do some searching for these covers, there's also one of the classic. I think it's 125 has the classic costume off, walking away into the evening Spider-Man cover after he throws away his costume. So there's that.
Yeah.
There's just all kinds of great stuff. So we need to wrap this up though. So,
well, and in closing, I just want to say that that the Master Kung Fu title made the best use of onomatopoetic.
Hit me with it. I want to hear it.
They was just like, I mean, they were like the masters of onomatopoetry. It was literally onomatopoetry in motion.
Nice.
If you will.
Nice. All right. That's good.
I can't imagine a better way to.
No.
So I'm sure you've probably figured out that the Foo Fighters title came from the idea of the Shang-Chi and company fighting Fu Manchu, not that he was a kung fu fighter. Though, oddly enough, that didn't occur to me till later and realized, wow, they both work.
It works on two levels, but we just really hope we're going to get, we just hope we're really going to get some Marvel Legends, some Shang-Chi, Master of Kung Fu Marvel Legends out of this deal, because we've been really wanting a newer, you know, classic Shang-Chi and maybe a modern Shang-Chi. a nice Fu Manchu. Like,
yeah,
give them to us. Maybe a Leopard Man.
Oh God, if there were Leopard Man in the film, I'm just, that's it.
That's it. We're done. We're done. We're cast out.
But yeah, don't just give us Shang-Chi. Give us Leko Wu, especially. Blackjack Tar is just an amazing, fun character to have. I can't stop saying, please, for the love of God, Marvel, go to the source.
Yeah, go to the source. And they've proven that they're willing to. You know, Black Panther was pretty amazing for leaning really heavily into source material. So give us that. We have, you know, what's funny is 4 or 5 years ago, I don't think I ever would have said I trust Marvel to make a movie based on Shang-Chi that is going to be something that I'm comfortable going to see. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, Black Panther becomes proof of concept that anything's possible, because they're not making we got to do a black superhero film. They're making a good movie.
Yes.
About one of the more compelling characters of the Marvel Universe. And I think that's the important thing. One of the things that often gets lost in the hype is Marvel has been insanely successful because they're making good movies. Don't just make movies, make good movies. Doesn't matter that they're, you know, superhero movies. It's right. Not that they're good superhero movies, it's they're good movies. People want to go see good movies.
Right. Yes. Agreed. All right, wrap her up. Give me my plugs.
All right, fannies, we're going to be coming to you, of course, in the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com. I'm actually trying to work up some more material for the website. It's pretty much become HeyKidsComics.com because I have not done any writing in ages, but I have so many things. There's a little project I've been wanting to work on for a long time, and I decided, because I can never remember enough of them at a time to make a full-scale essay, I'm going to do this piecemeal with a new series called Everything I Ever Needed to Know I Learned in the Movies.
Okay. I'm with it. I'm into that. Let's get it. I want to read it. I'm good on that.
Yeah, and I want to explore things like there are certain movie lines that bear more weight than is obvious.
Right. Okay.
On the surface. So we'll be exploring that soon. But we're coming at you from Jedi Cult Universe at JediCult.com. You can write to us at JCUmail@yahoo.com. And be sure and check out my my live streaming podcast on the first and third Sundays of every month on DallasOnAir.com at from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central on those self-same first and third Sundays is the Rantcore Pit Live with me and Eddie Medina, dropping some great Galaxy Far, Far Away content with your favorite Star Wars guys. And on the third Sunday of every month preceding the Rantcore Pit from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m., Isle of Toys, where I get to explore all manner of different fun toys.
Yeah, you do. It's a great show. And anybody who doesn't watch and or just listen when they can – they can't watch is not doing themselves a favor. Also, you can find us on all of the social medias at HK Comics Show. Things have been pretty busy, but we're still on top of things for the most part. Cole, do we have any teasers for what we got next week?
I unfortunately lost my master database when my work computer died. Luckily, I do have it available elsewhere.
So you guys don't get to know. You're going to be as surprised as we are, and that is absolutely fine. All right, are you ready to sign off, Cole? You got any other final thoughts about this topic?
Oh, not about this topic, but I do want to point out, because it will be timely, I need to make sure I give the right date here. Eddie and I will be at ArlingCon 2019.
Nice.
Wonderful convention that's been hosted for the last several years by the Arlington Public Library. It is on June 15th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And I believe they are back over at UTA here in Arlington, University of Texas in Arlington. Yes, they'll be in the UTA's E.H. Herford University Center at 300 West 1st Street in Arlington, Texas. Literally down the street from me, so it's always a treat to be able to not have to travel very far. We're going to be bringing our game show, Do You Like the Star Wars, for the first time to this show.
Heck yeah.
And, oh, yeah. And then also be, we'll have a special panel on the enduring, the just the influence of Star Wars for all of these years.
Hell yeah. All right. Here we go. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody. Thanks for sticking with us while we ran long again.
Yeah, we're going to do it every so often, and by every so often, I mean pretty much every week. Join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics when we all figure out what we're talking about and we talk about it. Good night, Cole.
Good night.